I must admit, we played Wales in the old days, and it was a lot to do with a freezing cold van with an engine in the middle. It's the only warm place.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin!
You are listening to episode 109 of Sapnin Podcast with myself, Sean Smith, and my good Merry Christmas friend, Morgan Richards.
Yes, it's me, Morgan Richards. And if you didn't know already, it's Christmas!
That's weird. You went off in my headphones then. Are you recording you at end?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Just checking. it is Christmas. And you guys should come on and feel the noise. I've only done that because it's Christmas. There's a pun from Sean that was equally as bad as Morgan's and he tries to fit in every week to a deadline. As Morgan said, our guest, or as Morgan alluded to, our guest this week is the fabulous, fabulous Dave Hill of Absolute Legends Slade.
Yes, literally the godfathers of rock and roll. Their inspiration to the modern era of rock and all the bands throughout the years that we're all obsessed with wouldn't be possible if it wasn't for Slade. Everyone from Noel Gallagher of Oasis to Corey Taylor from Slipknot, Kiss, Nirvana, credited them as an inspiration. And we thought, since we've got an episode coming out on Christmas Day, why not get festive with the wonderful David Hill from Slade?
Well, yeah, why not get one of the performers of the greatest Christmas song to have ever been written? Now, listen to me. If you disagree with our sentence, two things. Number one, you're wrong. Number two, let me know what you think is the best Christmas song at Sapnin Podcast socials. On Twitter and Instagram, go to at SAPPENINPOD. That's at SAPPENINPOD. And let me know what you think your best Christmas song is so I can reply to you telling you you're wrong and how it's Merry Christmas, everybody.
But Sean, you're in a very festive mood. I can tell you're wearing a red, crimson, orangey jumper that kind of shares the experience. Are you feeling all hyped up for the big day?
Well, not particularly. No, because it's 4 days away, isn't it?
It's
today. It's actually today. Christmas time. Why did I start singing that then? Merry Christmas, everyone. I am feeling surprisingly Christmassy, despite everything that's going on with everybody behind the scenes. Just want to say thank you very much. If you've listened to any of our episodes this year, it means the absolute world to both me and Morgan. Yeah, the fact that we still get to do it. The fact that last week we had a get-together with some of the Patreons of the podcast. And we had a fantastic Christmas / National Emo Day party together on Zoom.
Mm. Yes, we did. And it was absolutely lovely. But as Sean mentioned, you know, we thought since Christmas Day was a Friday, why not just have a lovely festive chat We could have just been really lazy, but we instead thought, let's get everyone in the spirit and have an inspirational chat by an actual music legend. This year is being full of great, great conversations, so why not top that off with another exceptional one? But massive thank you to everyone who supported us in 2020. I know it's been a very weird year for us all.
It's been a shit of a year.
Well, yeah, we've all had to deal with things that we didn't expect. But the fact that anybody is continuing to listen to us, showing their support and love, means the absolute world. So I'm hoping Father Christmas had you on their good list because you deserve it.
Oh, they do, not me.
Well, they do, yes. I don't know if you would be on the good list, Sean, because you're a little bit of a rapscallion, really, heart.
Well, I bloody never.
I mean, no, like, I just don't know if you would. I don't want to lie to you. I don't, like, would you be on the naughty list or would you be on the nice list?
I'd like to think nice list. Like, well, who's like, oh, do you know what, no, like, unless you've murdered, oh, no, no, I can't say anymore. Anyway, if you've listened to any of the 109 episodes, including this one, that we've put out, and you fancy supporting the lads, please think about checking out patreon.com/sapnin. That's patreon.com/sapnin to support the podcast moving forward. Somehow we've created a massively beautiful community of absolute legends who I love and adore very, very much. And we welcome you to be part of it. Please do. Please do.
Yes, what Sean said. Everyone in our community is absolutely lovely. And without them, this thing wouldn't have been able to keep going. So please check it out, patreon.com/sapnin. But let's just get straight into this, Sean. I mean, it's Christmas Day, for God's sake. Our listeners are waiting to unwrap the present that is the magical David Hill talking about over 50 years of touring in the music industry and some mad, mad stories he's experienced in that time.
Yes, what a legend. What an absolute rock star. A true rock star. He's such a rock star, right? He invented wearing uncomfortable shoes on stage.
Ooh.
So fucking take that, Machine Gun Kelly. Enjoy that one, you fucking tit. Anyway, here's the amazing Dave Hill. I fucking love this. I just loved being on the chat with a legend. Thank you very much. I hope you're having a great Christmas. I love you very much, and I know Morgan loves you as well. And yeah, check us out. Fucking tidy. Sapnin!
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Sapnin!
Sapnin!
It certainly is happening, and it's happening right now.
Yes! Yes! This week's guest is absolute UK, world music legend, and some would say fashionista, the fantastic Mr. Dave Hill of Slade.
Yes!
Yes, I'm here. Certainly here and doing this, and it's very enjoyable to talk to you. Yeah, talking about the past and all the things that obviously make up a band from the days I started anyway, and anything that can help you with your interview, I'll be glad to do that.
Oh, well, amazing. Thank you so much for joining us, Dave. This is an absolute pleasure, a Christmas treat, if we can say that as well. So, yeah, how are you doing? How's this year treated you in all the madness of 2020?
Well, to be honest with you, obviously nobody was prepared for this onslaught on my side of the business. But, I mean, looking at the bigger picture of more sensitivity towards as human beings to one another, I think it's been obviously a very sad, very dreadful year for many people. And I've been very sensitive towards that. Although I'm associated with the Christmas songs and many other number ones, it's not like I feel like being Mr. Jolly. I'm probably more so sensitive to where we are right now. I mean, from my personal point of view, I've been on the road for 50 years, right? So I've probably seen more of the world than most people ever have. And and because of the music and what we created back in the 70s and indeed the 80s, I've managed to use my past to create my future. I mean, in a lot of cases, a lot of bands don't continue. You get the Stones occasionally popping out for another tour. But in my case, it's never been like, I mean, when you're not in the charts, obviously people think you've disappeared. But it's not about that. It's about the body of work, the kind of songs, and the enjoyment within the band of what we've created. Now, I think one of the nice things is, we've never been a political group, and it isn't like something we were saying years ago, which isn't valid today. I mean, Come and Feel the Noise, Mob or Crazy. Now, I mean, I'm sure they're quite exciting tracks and loved by many people. And when I play, obviously, I'm an entertainer as well as a showman with the clothes and all the rest of it I'm known for.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And I'm sure you know all about that, you know, the various costumes, which obviously became part of what we call the salesmanship. You used to have a saying in the group, you see, it was a joke between me and the rest of the band, but when I used to get my outfits rigged up, and some of them I created myself, nobody would see them. And in the Top of the Pops dressing room, I'd go into the toilet area to put it all on, and I'd come out like out of a jackbox, if you know what I mean, suddenly appears. And I think the fun of that was that my manager was Chas Chandler, who was Jimi Hendrix's manager. And Chas Chandler was very fond of the things I got up to visually, because it was, when you get on Top of the Pops, you've got to have a great song. You've also got to sell it. And you've got to, with us, it was always about getting on a stage, wearing something and entertaining an audience. And it's the same principle with Top of the Pops. There were only two things in this country that mattered, and it was Radio 1 and Top of the Pops, and both needed each other, if you understand me. But when I used to come out of the dressing room, because they used to be knocking on the door saying, reveal all the costume, you know, that kind of thing. And I'd come out and they'd fall on their backs laughing, a bit like their Cadbury's potato mashed adverts, where they're lying on their backs laughing, or Peppa Pig anyway. But a bass player was never fond of what I wore, but Chas was, and Nod was a character anyway. But Chas would say, I think we've got another number one, man, because of Geordie. That's a bad Geordie voice, by the way. you know, I think it was true, actually, because the song we were promoting was Come On, Feel the Noise, right? And I'd come out with this costume, which ended up becoming the Metal Nun, but it wasn't meant to be a Metal Nun. It was meant to be Egyptian. But obviously, Not everybody thought that. But when I come out, there was the laughing. Then I went on Top of the Pops. And this is a true story. Rod Stewart was number one, you see. And, of course, we knocked him right off the top because the amount of sales we had on that record was phenomenal. And the following week, I think one of the faces, I think it was Ronnie Wood, says, I've never liked that, Dave Hill. In other words, I got the blame. I thought that was a great compliment. But the thing is, what I've been doing now to help me, I mean, I've got a big family. I've got 5 grandkids, and I've had a long marriage. But what I've always wanted to do was to write a solo album. And now, I don't mean a solo album a la I'm going to play guitar and instrumentals. I don't mean that. I mean that I've always been writing on and off for many years. I'm on the laptop, maybe, when I'm on the road, you know, and suddenly, it was like, you come on, you've got a great idea. You go on the software, Logic is what I use, and you're working away, and then you have to go to a gig, and you usually end up with an all-finished song. Now, what's actually happened, I've been totally concentrating in this room, and I've had several guitars hanging on my wall, which I've never used. I suddenly got this idea to actually concentrate on it in lockdown, and it's given me a bubble in my own creativity, and I've discovered that I've got a voice, as opposed to me being concerned about my voice, because I'm not going to attempt to sound like Noddy Holder and it's not going to be a Slade album, but it's going to have some of the elements in my guitar playing, but I'm very varied in how I play. You see, I can play piano, classical guitar. There's a lot of things I can do that people don't know me for. I wanted to do it for me and my family, and whatever happens to it, I'm sure somebody will take an interest in it anyway. I hope they will.
Oh, but, no doubt.
But the discovery of being in your own bubble,
yeah.
And the more you do it, the better you get at it, if you know what I'm saying. It's like I used to have a bit of a struggle with lyrics, and then suddenly I realised writing lyrics for songs is basically, if you're going to be real about it, write what you know, because you're not going to be writing a song to go out pulling girls like it was years ago, you know what I mean, when you're young. Because I think with the generation I grew up in, which goes way, way back, post 1946 through the 50s and the 60s, I was right there when rock and roll started, you know, with Elvis Presley. So I'm one of those that were in the first place, the same as the Beatles. And the influences we had from American music was pretty amazing. I mean, you hadn't got videos to copy. The only way you learnt was you buy the record and you sit by the radiogram and work it out. So that was actually really good, rather than somebody on a video going, oh, this is how so-and-so plays on so-and-so, which, unless they are that person, they don't really know how so-and-so plays on. It's like somebody trying to work out how I play, you know, and they don't get it right, because the person is the person. The beauty of learning from records is that sometimes you get it wrong, but actually it works out to be a little bit different, and you end up with a style that comes out of it rather than a copyist. It was very exciting, you see, because there weren't that many groups in the 60s. There were a lot of 60s bands, of course, but you used to have a lot of kids on the council estate. They'd all have a go at it, you know, and they'd play skiffle. And that's exactly how we started. And there used to be a guy called Lonnie Donegan, and there was Tommy Steele, and they all played skiffle kind of music, which was country, really, but that's how we started, you see. Then it was the electric guitar, and then it was Buddy Holly and Chuck Berry, which were all those people. I learnt off Chuck Berry because of his style of rhythm. A lot of Slade's things are influenced by Chuck Berry. He was just phenomenal. But we had a lot to have a listen to get our ideas, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, I wanted to touch on that because, I've seen some photos of, the early Slade together and stuff. And, you guys are, I suppose, dressed kind of like skinhead-ish.
Yeah, well, the truth behind that is we never were skinheads, really. But
yeah,
what happened was, you imagine that, you know, when you watch a film and then there's an artist or there's somebody on the stage and the right man is in the right place and walks up to you and goes, I'm going to make you a star, you know? Imagine that idea. Now, it wasn't quite like that, but we went to London and there was a man there called Jack Baverstock who used to be involved with Dave D, Dosey Beak and Mick and Titch in the 60s, right? And he spotted our talent when we went doing a demo in there, you see. And he said, I quite like you a lot. He said, how about making an album for me and I'll pay for it? And we were going, well, great idea, you know. We'll come down in the old van, you know, and bring the gear and start recording. And we just went down and did our show. And he took an interest and he said, you really need a manager or somebody in London, he says, because Northern management's not very good and you need somebody down here. So he then put us on to somebody who was an agent, and that agent knew Chas Chandler, right? Now, if you can imagine at this time, there were Robert Stigwood, there was Chas Chandler as a famous manager, and this agent said, well, I can put him in one of my clubs in London down Bond Street. He said, we've got a little club there called the Rasputin, and we found out that he was coming to see us. So we were on the stage, just being ourselves, totally ourselves. And then the man comes downstairs and we see him. We're a bit scared, you know, thinking, oh, I hope he likes us. And he just watched us. And then he walked across the dance floor and there was nobody really in anyway. So we were just playing what we always do. And he just said, I think you're great. I think you're a breath of fresh air and I want a manager. And of course, at that point, it was a bit like, he suddenly started talking about promotional ideas. He comes out with a load of things and we're thinking, my God, this is Chas Chandler, you know. But he understood rock and roll, and that's the point here. Our manager could understand how to produce a record and rock and roll records, which we grew up with. So when we got in the studio with him, of course, he followed suit of trying to record the songs that we did, which weren't all ours at the time. We weren't doing that much writing, you know. In fact, we used to try writing with each other until we found the actual winning combination. But Chas was very encouraging in the sense of saying to us, look, you've learnt all these songs by all these people from America. Now go and write your own from the experiences. And that's, we started to follow that thought. And then, frustratingly so, 12 months later, we weren't getting anywhere. And our publicist, Keith Haltham, who was quite well known, he used to be a publicist to the Stones. Chas said to Keith Haltham, he said, any ideas? He said, oh, this band's great. He said, but I don't know how to break them into the scene. Is there anything going on? He said, well, there's a skinhead movement. And he said, what? Skinheads? Yeah, he says, there's these skinheads and shaving their hair off and they're into sort of reggae and ska music, you see. And Chas went, ding, yes, I'll get their haircuts, right? Well, it was a really funny story because we'd all got nice girlfriends then. And it was a bit like, and we really looked great, you know. We got sort of, Nod had got this big mop of hair and I looked like George Harrison. It was all a bit like that. And it was a bit like a confidence and all the rest of it. And then Chas says, I want you to get your hair cut, all of you. You're going to make a fortune. We're going to do this. Well, we didn't want to argue, you see, in case he didn't want to manage us. So we went ahead with it, you see. Then we all had our hair cut off. Girlfriends left us, right? And it was a bit like, oh, I'm not going out with a skinhead. It was all a bit sort of like that. I was really uncomfortable with it because I had to wear bobber boots and braces. And it's most uncomfortable, that is, as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Can imagine.
He used to march us around London, right, to take us in posh places to make us a bit like, oh, my God, who's that over there? Oh, that's a new skinhead band. It was all a bit like that, you know. Any way to get publicity. Keith Haltham, on the other hand, was a bit upset because he said, he says, they're nice blokes, them Slade. He said, you can't do that to them. And he says, too late, I've already sent them down the barbers. And really, for a year or more with that, we pursued it, released a couple of songs. It didn't happen. And not only that, skinheads. How are skinheads going to like a band with a violinist in it?
That's true, to be honest, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
exactly. A skinhead playing violin on stage. I mean, we were doing the sort of songs we were doing. We were doing Nights in One Setting by the Mersey Blues and Frank Zappa and all sorts of stuff. It was hardly ska, and it was hardly, it was just, but basically, in a funny way, we basically give up on it in the end, and Chas just let us grow our hair back. And from growing our hair back came that famous hairstyle that I ended up with. Because it was what I grew from it, and Nod with his sideboards. And his flat cap was a thing in the Midlands, like a working class cap. So it became a bit sort of funky looking, you know, with like a flat cap before the mirrored hat. But bit by bit, piecing it together, the Bubba boots ended up being platforms in the end, because I got a guy in Kensington Market. And I went in one day and I said, can you make a boot with three platforms? He said, I can make a boot with 10 platforms. He said, it was a bit like that. I said, that's brilliant. I said, because I'm only 5'4" and it will make me look tall, you see, on stage. So he started. Now, at that time, believe it or not, Freddie Mercury was working in there in one of the outlets, because it was a market called Kensington Market. Scene. I mean, I didn't know Freddie, but there were lots of interesting people making clothes in there, you see. So it's one of those places where you always go to try and get something different. And this guy made me these platforms. And there was a guy in there selling long leather coats, right down past your knees, like. And I went up to him and I said, can you make all the colours in these coats? He said, coat's great, he said. He said, I'll make any colour you like. I said, could you make it in silver? He said, yeah, sounds great. I've noticed that the colour we didn't have colour television, and it was still black and white TV, you see, in the late 60s.
Genius.
But genius. One thing about silver is that it looks good in black and white TV, see.
Yes. So
so that was a bit of a winner. So I got him to make this coat, and then we had this minor hit with Get Down and Get With It before we had the big number one. And we got on Top of the Pops, and there was no looking back. As soon as we got on there, and the turning point in Slade's career is that colour television was coming in, and it was just on time. You know, when something meets something, it's a bit like we're the right band with the right clothes, and here's colour television to let you know exactly how it looks. So for me, the colour TV, the aspect of Top of the Pops, is that I can see what works and what doesn't work.
Mm.
And that's how it formulated into the success leading up to the Metal Nun.
That's unbelievable.
Literally phenomenal. But like, you know, you mentioned there, like, understanding rock and roll and the whole image and everything, but I think it's safe to say Slade has had such an impact on the modern day of rock music and everything building up to it. If you go back, there's so many artists who have stated you as influences, from people from the Ramones. Noel Gallagher said Oasis wouldn't be possible if it wasn't for Slade, and even Corey Taylor from Slipknot always mentions how much your band has helped him musically. I mean, when you hear stuff like that, is it just a wild experience to see how far Slade has come, both musically and just impacted people's minds over the years?
Well, I think we're, to try and put it into some sequence, and those list of people that love us also includes Kiss and Gene Simmons, right?
Yeah.
Now, and Nirvana.
And Nirvana, yeah.
It's unbelievable.
And certainly Noel, because I met him at the airport and I knew he was a fan, and he was very complimentary to me, and a nice guy, you know. But the aspect of it is that I think at the time, if you imagine that records in those days were selling like 100,000 copies per day if you were going for a number one, right?
Wow.
So the mass sales, there wasn't computers, there weren't games. You either played football or you played tennis or you played cricket, or alternatively you were into music, and most people were into music anyway. So even at school it was the biggest thing, you know, the most effective across falling in love with girls and all that kind of stuff. So if you imagine the development of that, music is a fundamental root to all things that came later. Now, with us, we were privy to a lot of things that I'd say Bruce Springsteen would have listened to. I do remember him turning up at one of our venues, come and check us out in New York. We didn't even know who he was because he wasn't that well known in England, but in America he was huge. And you don't know who's watching you, but there was one night which was quite funny, and we were in America, and there was this, it's a fairly, I can't remember the exact name, but it's a regular gig where B.B. King plays and lots of bands play this gig. And sitting in the audience, unbeknownst to me, is Kiss, right? But they, you don't know them because they're just sitting there and they're just this band staring at the stage, right? And the only reason I know they've been there because I met Gene Simmons later on, you see. And the funny thing was, a little funny story for you, I got these huge platforms and this silver gear and everything on stage. And they were watching this, right? And they had one of those stages where you had a walkout, you know, where you go down the centre part of the stage and the singer goes down. Well, what happens is I thought I'll go clogging down there, you know, in these booths. And to impress some of the audience. Because America was still trying to get used to us and we looked so different from any other band. So I went clogging down there and I got this super odd guitar, which was quite remarkably odd to anybody who's never seen one. And I went marching down there and I bloody slipped. And I slipped on my back, right? And of course, behind me was all sorts of jokes. Can you imagine the drummer and all them like shouting, Pillock, what's he doing? And I was lying on my back, but I made it look like it was actually meant. And I sort of kicked my legs out. And then I could see the roadie heading over, trying to lift me up, you see, at the platforms. But I actually got up and I went back and everybody's laughing away there. And then years later, when Gene Simmons makes it and we met him, he said, my God, he said, Dave Hill, yeah, a legend. And he said, oh, what do you mean? He said, oh, we were in so-and-so in New York and you were there with us and you came on stage and you were doing signs and then you came down and he said, what you did, you got on your back and kicked your legs out, man. That was an amazing trick. You know, thought it was part the act.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Saved it,
I didn't want to say that. I didn't want to spoil it, you know.
But yeah.
I think what I'm getting at here is that a lot of people, I wouldn't have known that Nirvana were fans or anything like that, but I've always been aware. Nod did an interview with Alice Cooper, because Alice Cooper's got a radio show in America, right? And we were promoting Come On, Feel the Hits, which was in the charts a couple of months ago in the top. In fact, it was number 8 in the actual proper charts, so which we haven't been in there since 1975, right? But the thing about it is the aspect of Alice Cooper is talking to Nod. And Nod's doing these interviews to promote it, thinking, well, we were never that big in America, you know. And Alice Cooper's going, you got to be joking, man. It's almost a little bit like we are really well known for somebody that really hasn't had any real hits there, you know, nothing like the number ones back here anyway. But Alice Cooper was talking in terms of we'd been massive, you know, and it's very strange. And Nod's scratching his head saying, I can't believe it. So Alice Cooper was obviously a fan. I mean, Aerosmith, we worked with them a lot in the States. In fact, they used to support us. Can you believe that? They supported us. And I mean, they made it in the end, but they supported us. And then we ended up supporting them. And it was quite funny one night. They had this big eye that lights up, right?
Yeah.
And it was a Spinal Tap night. You know the Spinal Tap?
Yeah.
The A come part way down and stopped and the lights went out. Oh, that just cracked me up, that did. But the thing is, with people who admire, I went to see James Blunt. He came to Wolverhampton Civic and he was currently having that big album, you know, that particular big album. And I didn't know him very well, but the drummer, he contacted me and James would love to meet you. And I was thinking, well, surely he didn't know much about me. He said, if you come, you'll really be surprised. I thought, oh, I'll go along then. So I went along with my son, who was obviously a bit of a fan, and I met him, and I thought, oh, nice guy, you know. And he says, and it was sort of a little bit funny. He said, we've got a little surprise for you tonight. So I go in the audience, right, and I'm sitting at the back. They're doing their songs, right, and mostly ballads and things like that. And then suddenly they start doing 'Cause I Love You, My First Number One. Huh? And they start stamping on the stage like we used to. And it was really hilarious. And then I'm in the audience, and some of the people spot me, and they go, he's playing your song. Playing your song. I said, yeah. I was thinking, my God, he can't be old enough to even know that song, you know. When I went to see him afterwards, I said, that was interesting, playing Cause I Love You. He said, it's a great song. He said, I'm sorry I didn't do it justice. And I said, I'm really surprised you know that song, because that's way back in 1971, you know. And I mean, he couldn't have been very old then. But the thing is, it's an ongoing thing. You see, sometimes the fans, well, they have kids, you know, and the kids get into the music. So, I mean, I know the Christmas song is something that will always be there. And it'll always be when I'm walking up the road, some bloke goes, see him over there, he's Mr. Christmas. The little kid goes, what do you mean, Dad? He said, he's the one that made that, you know, that record you like. And it's really funny, you know, because, and they sort of send the kid over, like, for the autograph, and he hasn't got a clue who you are. But I mean, I know that Slade's success is not just about the Christmas song. That's only part. No. But the aspect of who you impress, I think the honest opinion of it all is there was a guy helping me to write my life story a few years ago, and he was a real fan, but he got a certain thing about what he thought, the reasons in a way that we drove through a lot of a situation where back in the late 60s, early 70s, there was a lot of indulgent music, right? And in America, there was a lot of post-Vietnam protest songs and things like that, you see. So a lot of groups were getting into long solos, and it was all a bit serious, you see, until Kiss come along and all that. But I got the impression that the thing about us is we were working-class blokes, you know, in council houses, which I'm sure Noel Gallagher said this as well, because they come from council houses. But we kind of, I don't like to be disrespectful, but there was a sort of prog rock area where their eyes was firmly on America, as opposed to, there was a time when singles become unpopular. You know, it was all about the album. But when we made it, it wasn't just about the album anymore. It was back to the singles and the albums. And it was like the Beatles when they first made it. They always make great singles and then they make great albums. And that's how we, our success, came about by that idea that both of them are important. It's not like we're going to be an album band. We won't release a single because it's not cool. We were the furthest thing away from trying to imagine that we were cool. It was more the fact that we were genuinely different, and we got a singer. I mean, our singer, for instance, it wasn't at first that a lot of people liked his voice, you know, because the reason he got powerful, the only way he could hear himself was to shout over our backing because we were so loud, you know. And he used to be singing away there and breaking speakers, right? And his voice got more and more powerful as the years went on, you see, due to playing clubs and all that. So, and it's a bit like some people say, oh, you'll never get anywhere with that singer, he shouts. But the very fact is, his unique voice is one of the great reasons that we did get somewhere, because we were different. We weren't, you know, it's not music that... I know Noel doesn't sing it. Well, he doesn't. He's not doing it anymore, but we're good mates, you see. And I know Noel has probably got a much more mature voice now, and he could quite easily make a solo album. It's up to him. But I think when you're singing like that, the notes he was getting in those days were when you got Robert Plant on the one hand, but you got Noel on the other, who had all this guts. And I think the bit about the joy in the music is that music was, our songs were strong and catchy, but they're all almost that the public could connect with them, you know. I think the beauty of a lot of our songs is they were what people were doing, you know, having a good time or coming to the gigs. In London particularly, we played Earl's Court, which was a notoriously bad place to play. Nobody ever sold it out. And we sold it out. And the tubes and the trains, the transport system put on extra tubes to bring dressed up fans from the outskirts of London to pack that place out. And of course, we wouldn't have known that at the time because we were there and it was just, well, can you imagine it? Top hats and glitter coming all through. I mean, you're not going to get that now, are you? I mean,
No, not at all. The
personalities of the things that happened in the 70s. I mean, look at Bowie, look at Rod Stewart, look at the different bands. Everybody had some sort of flavour. A lot of it, I mean, there were some more serious groups, of course, but generally speaking, that we were a very, very good, or I would say a great rock and roll band. You know, we had that element, and so were the Beatles at first. They were a great rock and roll group that obviously wrote great songs, and I think initially they were into rock and roll like we were, and I think those principles make for a better group. And it takes years to be a good group, I know that, but, you know, to actually, because we reached a point in Slay, we'd been playing so long together, we could just walk on a stage and knew how each other were thinking, you know, and that's what makes it work. It's not just about formulating songs on a laptop at home, but having something of, you know, rhythm and communication between individuals still makes of what a great band is.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Correct. That's awesome.
I mean, the records also, a point to be noted, is that if you listen to Slade records, and indeed a lot of records from that period, where we were using what you call 24-track, 2-inch tape, and editing was not easy when those machines, right? There was no cut and paste or anything like that. So every chorus that we sang in the Come On Feel the Noise or any of those tracks was done individually for each chorus. You didn't do one chorus and cut and paste it all the way through. And what you get through Slade's music and a lot of good music is there's always nuances as the track develops. And also, it's not quantized to death. So therefore, the track moves as it goes along. It gets more exciting because it gets slightly faster without getting too fast. But that's the trick. You're trying to have a general balance when you're making the track between the four of us. Nod used to go in a booth. We all stood together around the drums, and we screened each all the gear off, and we played and eventually got the tape by doing it several times for Chas Chandler to make a choice. I would then go back in the studio and start to replace what I'd already played on the main track. But we always kept what we did on the main track as the main guide, because that's where the feeling comes from. And that's an absolute true story, is how we recorded. Because there wasn't loads of things on our track. It wasn't over recorded or lots of other instruments. It was basically four guys in a band.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a big thing. I think a lot of people listening to this who are in bands now don't appreciate, because a lot of bands now, they just go in and, like you said, everything's quantized, everything's played to click. Everything's then, you know, auto-tuned to death and stuff. So I'm getting like, a lot of new bands I listen to now, I think, well, this could just be, this feels like almost like a robot has created it. So it doesn't have the human feel that you're talking about, the groove or the vibe.
There is something where if you're all looking at the same page, you're likely to write the same thing or do the same thing. I'm not knocking that, because me learning how to use Logic could have either been Logic or Pro Tools, but I chose to use Logic because it'd be an easy way of accessing instruments while I was away. And you're not going to have a drummer in your bedroom, are you? No, you can
spare drummer.
Yeah, well,
you know, spare drummer lying about.
Another good point for a lot of groups to think about also is that one of the things our manager taught us was don't outgrow your fans. So when you become successful, and we had several records with a certain feel, as you well know, is that we didn't suddenly sidetrack into doing something complicated, which we would have done in the 60s. You know, suddenly, I don't know, violins or something, or using people that are not actually in the band. We didn't go there, so we didn't outgrow. So the fans, when they like something, it's you have a natural ability to continue to do and play that, because everybody that has styles tends to follow that route until they change their albums, like the Beatles did. But they have the Beatles' early albums, to me, are the best, because they were still performing live, so they'd still got, like Lennon got fire in his voice doing those clubs with endless times. And it was the same with Slade, because we were always playing live. Nod's voice was always kicking in there, you see. If you leave it alone for months and months or whatever, and you start getting into studios, bit by bit your voice starts to change, can sometimes not be for the better. But I think if bands are following the route of something they're good at, to stick at it for, you know, while they mature. Although I know it's different now, because it seems like people want to make it as quickly as possible, take the money and run.
Yeah.
Whereas it wasn't about the money with us. It was never about the money. I mean, we're not against earning money, but we were never motivated by the fact. I mean, sometimes you get a better gig back home. You know, we used to play these clubs and pubs and, you know, mecca ballrooms. And at first, we didn't get much work because people say, "Oh, you don't play any pop records, so we don't want to book you." When you're outside the box, they don't quite get it. But it's the difference of you being outside the box that eventually will either make it or won't make it for you, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. But with all those incredible stories, Dave, one thing I just want to pick your mind about very quickly before you go is I believe back in 1980, you headlined Reading Festival after replacing Ozzy Osbourne. And that gig itself is being very cynical with you guys and giving a new fire to the band at the time and letting you go on from that period. I just wanted to pick your brain about that time and that gig and what was it like for you?
We'd never been offered Reading when we were successful. And then we'd been through quite a long period of no success, and it was all about the disco and the BJs and all that sort of stuff, and it was all about DJs and things. But we continued to play, you see. But come 1980, it was getting very difficult, you know, because if you weren't selling records, you really weren't earning any money. And playing live wasn't that lucrative. But it kept us together. But I did reach a turning point in my life where I was thinking of the possibility of I'd got children, and I was trying to figure in my mind whether, well, you get a feeling like, where are we going from here? And it was getting very odd. And the very thing I love, I was suddenly booking against. And it wasn't that I didn't want to do it. It was just a need. And to be honest with you, the person who talked me into it was Chas Chandler. Now, I told Nod I didn't want to do it because I thought there'd be a lot of new groups on there, UFO, and how we're going to fit into that scene. On the other hand, Chas Chandler had a completely different opinion, and I happened to have the right opinion, actually. I said, "Look, Chas," I said, "I'm thinking of doing this, you know, trying to get another way of earning some money." He said, "Don't worry about that, Dave." He said, "You are a fantastic band. You have more hit records and more experience than any group on that stage." Now, I knew in the past, many years ago in the past, we did Lincoln Festival, and Stanley Baker, the actor from Zulu, put the show on, and nobody went down as well as we did, and there were big groups on that, like the Beach Boys, the Who, and all sorts of things. But they had bad weather, and we went on and stormed it, and it got us in the papers, right? Now, Reading, looking at that one, I got to Reading. We weren't advertised. We went in the wrong car park. We were in the Punter's car park, right?
I've done that.
We're in the wrong park. We're in a cheap Ford, right? This is a true story. We're in this Ford car, and the bloke on the gate says, "Oh, I know you lot are. What are you not here? You know, all that kind of stuff. Coming in here in the wrong place. Here's the backstage area." So we got in the backstage area, and of course, there were these limos turning up, right, you know. And we were looking at all this going, there's someone flipping on stuff. These limos. And we got in there, and the press saw us. And they went, "Oh, great." He said, "A real band." Oh, it was just really funny. They said, "Oh, there's all these ruddy posers." He said, "They're turning up with dark shades on and they won't talk to us." You know, it was all a bit like that, you see. And I don't know which ones they were referring to, but there was a lot of names on there. And we got there as if we were like everybody's mate, you know. And then Chaz says, I've got a good feeling about this, because he got this definite feeling about this show. 40,000 people, right? And I believe that we were going to go later on in the show, but I think Def Leppard said they wanted to go on after us or something like that. I seem to remember something like that anyway. And we were just knocking about. We didn't care. Tommy Vance came up. He was the DJ at the time doing the festival. He said, "It's been right boring, this festival." He said, "Flipping hell." He said, "Everybody's looking at the floor and playing long solos." Well, I was thinking, oh, yeah. And we went on stage. We had no sound check, right? So we went on stage, and it was on the hoof, as we call it. You're on your feet and go for it. So we play three songs, one after the other. That's a rule of thumb in Slade. You don't give them a chance to boo, right? So you play three songs, right?
Nice.
And it certainly wasn't a boo after those three songs. It went completely in a different area. And then it built and built to the point where the audience were going crazy for us to play the Christmas song. And Nod said, "We're not doing it. It's not Christmas." He said, "You lot, sing it." Now, 40,000 people singing the Christmas song says a lot to you, doesn't it? Right?
Yeah.
And I think that actually points out that after that show, I was back in the charts within 3 months. And then it went on to further success into the 80s. And I ended up touring with Whitesnake and all sorts of stuff. But to be honest with you, I'd hate to think what would have happened if I hadn't have done that show. But I think undeniably, my life has been a consistent thing where the music's always spoke to me, and somehow it's kept me there. And if you think a person that hasn't been off the road for 50 years, I've got to have something to say about myself, that this is not a job I do, it's a life.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And well said.
Yeah, and well, yeah, congratulations on it all, because it's been absolutely amazing. Yeah, just thank you for everything. Thank you for the music. Thank you for the inspiration. It's amazing. So, yeah, thank you so much.
Kind of like an ABBA song, that, dude. Thank you for the music.
Bloody hell.
Yeah. The point is, I guess we're undeniably British, Slade, and we have a root in black country music. We come from an area full of factories, where it was in those days, and I think a lot to do with bands like Sabbath, ELO, and all those people come out this area. Roy Wood, we knew them all, and we came from that breed of groups which everybody could play good, and we're different, you know. And I think the thing is, I'm proud to be a part of it. And when people meet me, they smile. They don't look at the floor. It's a bit sort of uplifting. I know we're not uplifted at the moment at this time, and we have to be sensitive towards people's losses. This is not going to be a Christmas that we normally have. It's going to be sad in many ways. But if you can bring a bit of joy to some, you know, even in a reflective way, it always helps. So I hope that's helped your podcast, and I appreciate doing it with you and giving me the time. I enjoy doing it. I like talking.
We love listening. Yeah, we love listening, and it's amazing.
Well,
and
I've got so many stories that you'd be a week still talking to me, and I'll probably pass out.
Well, I'll tell you what we'll do then. When this new music is ready, let's have another conversation. We'd love that very much.
Well, if I can say anything to you, just in a sense, is that hopefully we will get through this. And at the moment, it is for people to be mindful and have a peaceful Christmas together. We might not be able to see all our friends, but what we really want, isn't it, that we'll be able to see them all next time. and next year. And this is the trick, isn't it? Just to pull together, like in wartime, I suppose, when people had to grow crops and all the rest of it. There's a similarity is when it's a, okay, we're dealing with something we don't fully understand, but nevertheless, Britain has always had a kind of spirit of togetherness. And hopefully, with your listeners, is that maybe we will be talking of better days and hopefully jumping around a bit more. I hope to be jumping around a bit more next year anyway when I get back on the road.
Incredible. Yeah, well, thank you so much, Dave. This has been a treat. I think you're going to bring a lot of smiles to people this Christmas with these stories. So thank you so much.
Well, as I say, be safe, all of you.
You're listening to Sam and Podcast!
Yes! Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Unfucking believable, that was. The whole time I was just looking at you going, I can't get over this. This is happening. This is mad. It's like a man I literally watched on Top of the Pops and I've seen being, you know, interviewed constantly all over TV over the years is just there. Just talking to us about his life and the crazy, absolutely crazy shit that they've done. And I hope we get to do a round two with Dave. Because there's so much more. There's loads of stuff that I didn't ask him. I wanted to know what was the most costly and also the cheapest outfit that he came up with. He has some absolutely bonkers outfits I'd like to have known about.
Yeah, that would have been an insight. But as we said, Dave has just got so many incredible stories from his time in the industry. Like, just to think of all those people he's influenced over the years and the fact that they've told him how much he means to them as a professional, yeah, and personally as music fans is outstanding. So yeah, it was a fright. We couldn't not put out something as an extra treat for you all on the Friday of Christmas Day. So who better than the fabulous David Hill from Slade? And of course, if you didn't know already, then the band have actually just put up one of their classic compilation records titled Crackers, the ultimate party album on all streaming services now. That includes loads of festive tracks and some bonuses from some of their greatest hits played live, demos and everything else. So if you fancy, if you're having Christmas dinner with your grandmother right now, yeah, chuck that on after the podcast and have a lovely dance with a bit of the bubbly.
With it, what? You mean champagne? I thought you were calling your nan bubbly. I was like, "Who's what? How do you know specifically the nan was called bubbly?"
Nana bubbly.
Nana bubbly. Hey! Well, I think we've all had a nana bubbly. It's like, oh, nana's on it. Hey, nana bubbly's off. Yeah, thanks again to Dave. I know I keep saying it, but it was awesome. We had a lot of fun. And yeah, I was a little bit worried at first.
Worried. Why are you getting worried?
But more so with legends and people like Dave. Like, I'm not sure at first, you know, I was like, oh, perhaps he's going to hate us because, you know,
because we're young lads. Because we're fucking nuts.
Yeah, because he can see our faces. That's why I thought he might hate us.
Yeah,
but
okay,
yeah, he turned out to be absolutely lovely. So yeah, what a fucking legend. I can't believe that we've put one of these out every Friday now, right? For 109 Fridays.
Yes.
And of course, we could not leave today off. So here we are working on Christmas Day. We appreciate you if you've downloaded this. If you're listening to it on Christmas Day, I hope you're having a great Christmas Day. And you have a brilliant, brilliant new year.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Just yes. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes, but you know, if you wanted to go, oh, those boys are really nice, making sure that we had something to listen to on Christmas Day, especially as good as episode as this, I want to give something back to them. I want to give them the presents that Santa has not delivered to them because they're a bunch of pillocks. Well, you can head over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/sapnin, and just become a part of the absolutely wonderful community, because not only does it help this thing going, but you get to make some incredible friends with some of our favorite people, and it's just all a lovely, lovely time.
Yes, what a community, what a bunch of legends. I won't go on too much. Again, patreon.com/sapnin. We had a drunken Zoom get together with everybody Well, I did. I got fucking absolutely steaming very, very fast on the weekend when we did the Zoom. And then you came in and looked disappointed, so I had to leave.
Disappointed in you?
Well, just disappointed in general. I was guessing it was me. In our Patreon Zoom, we had a drop-in from a former bassist of Funeral for a Friend, Gareth Davis.
Yes, we did, which was very nice.
Which was awesome. So, thanks to Marcy for facilitating that. Sorry to Gareth that I missed it.
Hmm. And also a shout-out to our Patreons, Andrew Keach and Julia, who absolutely lost their fucking minds and were staring at the screen like if an alien had just appeared. It was wonderful. I reckon Gareth should be a future guest on the podcast one day.
Yeah, I'd like that very, very much. That would be fan-bloody-tastic. So, yeah, let's think about that for the future.
Yes, but as it's Christmas, Sean, is there any other things you'd like to tell us about your festive experiences? I mean, you've been on the road a lot. I'm sure, you know, you haven't played a show on Christmas Day because fucking nutcases would do that. But I mean, what's the closest festive things while on the road? Any little stories come to mind? I know you've done New Year's Eve parties before. Was that one of them?
Yeah, I think I don't know. I remember one time that we were stuck at, I think we were stuck in Belgium while, yeah, so basically the blackout was stuck in Belgium nearly over Christmas because our management hadn't paid the bus company in time. So the bus was kind of holding us ransom on the 23rd of December going, going to need to get paid the full amount or you can't go home. So that happened. I remember that happening. That was like Home Alone, but different. It was, well, not Home Alone, was it? It was Away Together.
So literally the opposite. Fucking hell. Have you already had a bit of fucking...
No,
have you had a gin and tonic? What the fuck?
I haven't touched anything Christmassy yet. No Baileys, nothing. Yeah, we were Away and Together, which is should have been the sequel to Home Alone 2, Lost in New York, right?
Hmm.
He's not home.
He's not, is he? You've just cracked it. You just cracked the code, yeah?
Right, that's it. Culkin, get on the fucking podcast. Guys, anybody listening to this, I want you to get in touch with Macaulay Culkin on his socials and make him come on this podcast, please. I would love a chat with Macaulay Culkin because I want to know what bloody metal he loves, as we all do. What does Kevin McAllister like to mosh to?
Well, I never.
Yeah.
I've got to ask, since you brought up Home Alone, is Die Hard a Christmas film?
No, it came out in February, I believe.
Yeah, but it takes place on Christmas Eve, right?
I don't give a flying fuck. When did it come out? A Christmas film. No, no, no. If a to be a Christmas film, it's got to be out over... It must have been intended to have been out over Christmas.
Not after that's Christmas.
That's exactly it. That's how I see it. Okay. Unless Die Hard is literally... I sound like it's a Welsh person. Die Hard. You know David Hard? Do you know David Hard? Anyway, David Hard, right? Unless they brought it out 10 months early for Christmas.
This might have been a possibility because it was massive. So,
yeah, I don't think that... I know it's set in Christmas.
Mm.
And you know me. I like misery more than anybody, right? So all the happy Christmas films can piss off. I like Hans Gruber going, Mr. Takagi will not be joining us for the rest of his life. Or, I shall count to three, there shall not be four. That's perfect. I love that. I love Alan Rickman being an evil German. But sadly, it came out in February. So for me, not a Christmas film.
Okay. Quick shout out to the films Jingle All the Way, which is brilliant if anyone hasn't seen that. And it's not a Christmas film, but there is a wonderful Christmas scene in it of Mean Girls, which is no surprise to anyone listening to this podcast. I had to get my love for that film into it somewhere.
Mad. Anyway, without further ado, check out the description of this podcast on whatever you're listening it to on, whether it's your computer, your phone or your computer, or I don't know, maybe you're listening on your computer or phone. I don't know. Where else can people listen? I don't know where else people can fucking listen to podcasts. It's phone or computer, innit?
TV, your fucking tablet, your car. You can be listening to this in your car. You could be listening to this on the toilet. You could be listening to this having a big Christmas shit after you've had your meal.
Yes, Morgan. All those things you just named, right, are activities where you'd have your phone or a radio.
Not if you're rich enough, you could have your toilet become a speaker.
The fuck you are? Are you pissed? Are you drunk?
Might be.
Are you drunk with Christmas cheer after talking to Dave?
I don't know what's up out of this cup, to be honest with you.
Jesus Christ. Oh, I know what you've done. You've accidentally inhaled that snow I sent you. That wasn't no. Never mind. Anyway, the description of this podcast, wherever you bloody listen, check it out. Not only does it tell you a bit about the episode, but it also has trillions and trillions, not trillions, has several names of some of the patrons involved in the making of this podcast. Without any of these guys, it wouldn't be possible. I genuinely mean that, because I swear me and Morgan would have given up by now, because it's
hard work. We're a two-man team, and there's a lot going into this. So without them, this would not be possible. But you're also going to give a gigantic shout-out to the elite members of the Patreon.
Oh, that's my gigantic shout-out. Carry on.
who are the top tiers. They normally change their names to mess with us, to have a little bit of a laugh on the podcast. I'm hoping this week it's all festiveness. But we'll have a look now.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Yeah, I don't think it is, but thank you very much to Kylie Wheeler, Naomi Leewaway, Mitch Perry, Emma Barber, Happy Birthday Scott, Merry Christmas everyone, that's from Janelle Castor, Nathan Croshaw, Kelly Young, Figgy the Slutty Wiener Wacker, Sarah, Happy Birthday Scott Jones, the true Patreon Jesus James, Paul Hirschfield, Liam Connolly, Scooby Drew Styles, Kelly Irwin, Mike Lengler, Kat Besant, Amandine Urbano, Loz, Tony Michael, Amy Campion, Johnny Phillips, Scott, I'm not saying I'm the Messiah, but have you seen us in the same room together, Jones? Bert, well, we have, yeah, I've been in the same room as Scott Jones, so he can't be the Messiah. Simon Amos, thank you very much. Jody Shannon, Ollie, happy birthday to the micro penis Jesus, old Scotty J. Amesbury, Kate Stevenson, Danny Eaton, Jenny Sexy Boy Munster, Lucy Diaz, Becky Handy, Martina McManus, Emily Senegals, Kelly, happy birthday, old man Scott. May your birthday be huge, unlike your penis, Mallory. John and Emma, Erin Howard, Jason, happy birthday, Scott. I remember when this was all Fields Jones Heredia. Jenny Robson, Marcy Jacobson, Louis Cook, Sandra Kuacek, Craig Tipwank Fosh Harris, Kelly Cannon, Kevin Clark, Lou Soul, Livy Cropper, James McNaught, Tallulah Grant, Cocksmack the Loose Lipped Douche Canoe, Sharif Awadali, Lydia Henderson, Dana Dancefloor Darling Lasnova, Nuala Clark, Julia Christmas Pun Slamy Ravitch, cow. TJ, old man Scott Jones said I had to change it or he'd hurt me, Amber Shattuck. Josh, all I want for Christmas is my one phone call, Crisp. Adam Parslow, Alice as Pencilwood, the Kerristmas elf, and last but no means least, Jacob Turner, who said he joined so he could have a stupid name, but what he's done is he's forgotten to change his name in time, so he hasn't got around to doing it, so technically we win. Thank you very much to all of those people. You literally mean the world to us. If you're part of the Patreon, you mean the world to us. I hope you have an amazing Christmas. As we all know now, by next week, we would have missed my birthday. So the fact that you didn't all change your name to Happy Birthday Sean really, really stings. It really, really stings. You should have been more thoughtful than that, but instead you went for Scott Jones. So fuck you guys. But also, thank you very much. I hope you have a great Christmas. I hope you have a great Sean birthday, Seanniversary. And please stay safe. Keep your tongue out. Morgan, is there anything else?
I'm very sorry to find out that Scott has a micro. And happy birthday, Sean. For the 29th, we will be back next Friday and every Friday bringing you some wacky content with guests. New Year's Day is next week, so this is the last episode of the year. This is our last 2020 episode.
Oh, what a shit year. Fuck off 2020. What a load of crap. What a load of fucking shit this year was, apart from the lovely guests we've had on.
Podcast-wise, yeah, we haven't done too bad because we've had some lovely guests.
Oh, yeah, we've managed to pull it out the bag. I don't know. Yeah, oh, yeah, we were shitting ourselves early on when we realised we couldn't see people. And then we did that first one over Zoom with Bert McCracken from The Used.
Yes, we did.
And everything else has been quite good since. Fingers crossed. I've cursed that now, haven't I? 21's going to be a right fucking shitter for us, I bet. Anyway, I'll be part of the 37 Club, which is 10 years too late for the 27 Club. So that's something we got to look forward to as well. Anyway, hope you're all well. Let's move on. Sapnin!
Merry Christmas, you filthy animals.
That's an Home Alone quote.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.